The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We are roasting here at Edstone. Britain is set to possibly record its hottest day in the month of May in 176 years right here at Edstone. That's right. We're expecting it to top 80 degrees today. That's the best Sam could do on short notice. A wonderful sound effect. Did you record that yourself? He did. That's actual. That's original. That's not just some kind of stock sound effect. That is produced right here at Edstone. Well, we like to have a little bit of fun with the scorching days in the UK, because when compared to Oklahoma, this is just like a mild spring day in so many ways. Now, to be fair, down south, I believe, in the southern part of the UK around London, I think it's actually going to get up to over 90 degrees today. So that is pretty hot. It's still not Oklahoma hot, but it is hot. And really, we've had beautiful weather all week. We enjoyed a nice evening with the late sunsets, of course, here in the UK, too. We had a beautiful evening last night here on the campus with our special guest that we had on the program yesterday, Nicholas Frank. He joined us for a barbecue out on the patio alongside the Edstone Hall here. And I think he was there chatting it up with some of our students and others, employees and such, visitors from the region here, chatting it up for several hours until past 10 o'clock at night. And he had to catch an early flight out of Birmingham this morning. So we just really had an enjoyable afternoon and evening with him. You know, of course, if you've been listening to the radio program, you know that we had him on yesterday. We also had him in the conference room for about 3 hours of videotaping. And as I said in the trumpet brief we sent out last night, hopefully we're going to be able to put together a short documentary in the lead up to the German elections in September. So we're excited about that. Of course, there's lots of work to be done yet just with the raw taping 3 hours straight. We'll have to do some editing and such. But he was very generous with his time, as I said. He brought a huge stack of photos from the World War II era. And just as we sifted through all of them, he was there telling us who was who and what period it was from, where it was. So just a fascinating day, an educational day for us here at Edstone and the radio program. We've had some wonderful feedback. I'll get into that later on in the show. But some of the numbers were also pretty exciting to see. I think Sam calculated it up this morning. We had about 300 people listening in live to our two websites, KPCG and thetrumpet.com, and typically I think we have about 150 to 200. But then, as I mentioned in the trumpet brief, we also, for the first time, we live streamed the radio show on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. And Richard Palmer was estimating that those three additional streams brought in about 500 more listeners. So that was just for the live stream. Of course, it's broadcast live over the air around Northern Edmund, so we don't know how many listened in that way. But then following the live production, we've had all totaled about 300 views on Twitter, 600 Facebook views, counting two Facebook pages of ours. We've had over 550 views on the YouTube channel, the trumpet.com YouTube channel. And then we've had up over 700 listens on SoundCloud. Now, these numbers don't represent people that have listened from start to finish, but at some point along the way in that recording or that podcast, that gives you an idea of just how the audience size was yesterday and through to today. So that's very encouraging and hopefully a sign of things to come as we experiment it with those live feeds going through Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. And that is something that I think we can look forward to doing with every program in the days or perhaps weeks ahead. Well, while we're on the number, or rather the subject of statistics, I didn't update you on last weekend's Key of David program here in the UK. We had Paul's final epistle and the great falling away from the truth. This was a program that advertised the true history of God's true church and the royal book of Revelation. It brought in 150 requests for those two books. And then that, of course, followed the repeat, our most popular repeat by far, by a long shot, the most important book since the Bible. That brought in 182 requests for Mystery of the Ages. So some good numbers all the way around, and we'll certainly do our best to keep you posted on these things as they come in, and certainly as we see growth. Well, I've been sitting on this particular story. There's been so much going on this past week, over the last couple of days in particular. But on Monday evening, the U.S. radio host Mark Levin, he's been in Israel for a few days, and so I made a point to listen to, I think he had two or three programs that he broadcasted from over in Israel, and he's had some guests on from Israel, some names that we're very well familiar with, and all of the 20-some visits that I've made to Israel myself over the past many years. But in any event, he's giving his first program. This is his first time in Israel. He's giving his first program from Israel, and his first host on Monday evening was Mr. Dory Gold. And Dory Gold, of course, is someone that we've had a relationship. We haven't talked to him in a few years, I guess, but we have, going back to 2007 and 8, I believe. We've had him over for dinner when we had a crew over there in Israel. I forget what year that was. I think it was 2007, maybe 2008. In any event, he's been very nice over the years and has communicated with us on occasion. He's obviously a prominent official, has been in the Israeli government. He has his own think tank there in Israel. And he's, as I say, he's on the show here with Mark Levin. And here's what he got into in less than 5 minutes. The show has only been on for a few minutes from Israel. Mark Levin's first ever from Israel. And less than 5 minutes into the show, here's what he said, clip one.
You know, there's a whole group of modernists who want to prove that King David never existed, that the Bible is full of myths and falsehoods. And recently, an Israeli archaeologist by the name of Eilat Mazar found what she believes is the palace of King David here in the southern part of Jerusalem in what's called the City of David. It's an extraordinary discovery. She's found walls there. She calls them Solomonic walls because they come from the era of King Solomon. We're finding through archaeology that the Bible is true. Just one other. You know, if you take the descendants of King David, you get to the kings of Israel and the kings of Judah. You might have heard of a name, Hezekiah. We found his royal seal. So when UNESCO, that UN branch which just issues lies on a regular basis, tries to deny that the Jewish people have a connection to Jerusalem, we can take out the royal seals of the kings of Judah and Israel and show that these guys are just making up history and using political muscle in the United Nations to get it approved.
That was Dory Gold on a radio program from Israel Monday evening, earlier this week, showing just how, I mean, it's a small world, especially in Israel, especially in this little sliver of property there in Israel. He mentions Dr. Eilat Mazar. He refers to the Hezekiah seal, which we broke that story in December of 2015, if you remember, on thetrumpet.com with an article and, of course, a 10-minute documentary that's still on our YouTube channel. You may not have seen it in a while, but it has over 380,000 views. It's one of our top-viewed videos there at the Trumpet YouTube channel. That video about King Hezekiah's seal impression. She, of course, made it known in early December 2015. And leading up to that date, when it was revealed to the whole world, we were working, our television crew, we were working secretively with Dr. Mazar to put together the press release and the news story and the video that we were going to help her produce to make that known to the largest audience possible. And you see there, just in that simple discussion between Mark Levin and Dory Gold, you see just how significant that discovery really and truly is. It really, as Dory Gold brings out, I mean, it's proving the Bible true. And this is something that we don't want to forget just because it's a story that's now a couple years old. But it really does prove the authenticity of the Holy Scriptures. Now, he's having this exchange with a U.S. radio host, and then he gets into some of the history of the Bible, the Old Testament. And notice what Mr. Gold goes on to say, clip two.
The descendants of King Solomon split two ways. Some of them went northward and formed with 10 tribes the kingdom of Israel. Two tribes stayed in the south, and they had the kingdom of Judah. And the modern-day Jews are descendants of the kingdom of Judah.
That's, again, Dory Gold talking about the two kingdoms, the tribe splitting, 10 going to the north, and two tribes staying in the south. The two tribes in the south having the kingdom of Judah. And he said there that the modern-day Jews are descendants of the kingdom of Judah, the southern kingdom, in other words. That was great hearing him point this out because of how so many today just falsely assume that all 12 tribes are Jewish. Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong brings this out in the United States and Britain in Prophecy. That people just carelessly assume, even biblical commentators. It shows just how little they know about the Bible, about Old Testament history. Mr. Armstrong goes through all of this in the United States and Britain in Prophecy. You probably remember him saying, all Jews are Israelites, that's true, but not all Israelites are Jews. There were the 10 tribes that went north. They split in two. This takes you back to some of the history following King Solomon's reign, Jeroboam and Rehoboam. They split in two, as he explained in that clip. The 10 tribes to the north, the kingdom of Israel. They took the name Israel with them. And then the two to the south, the kingdom of Judah. And it's from that kingdom that the modern day Jews have come from. A simple, basic, biblical fact. And yet you hear hardly anyone pointing it out today because few people understand it or know it. It's refreshing. It's refreshing to hear it, particularly on such a popular radio program as Mark Levin's. Here's one final clip from Dory Gold's exchange with Mark Levin, clip three.
The kingdom of Israel in the north was destroyed by the Assyrian Empire. Names like Tiglath-Pileser, Sennacherib. They were the kings of Assyria, northern Mesopotamia, that came across the Fertile Crescent and attacked Israel. The kings of Judah survived, persevered, built fortifications around Jerusalem, like I mentioned Hezekiah, and protected the city. Many of those who were in the tribes of the north joined the kingdom of Judah, and it became very strong, but it was finally overtaken by the Babylonian Empire. By a name which most Jews remember, Nebuchadnezzar.
Okay, so some basic history, and here again, he's probably missing a few points. I don't think he necessarily understands everything that's brought out in the United States and Britain in Prophecy, but he understands a lot. He knows the Old Testament scriptures, so many of them. The kingdom of Israel, as he brings out, destroyed by the Assyrian Empire. We should add to that they were the empire, or rather the kingdom, was not just destroyed. The Israelites, as we'll see here in just a second, they were removed. They were removed. This is brought out in 2 Kings 17. You can start turning over there. We'll just look at that history. Since we're on the subject, let's look at what the Bible has to say So Israel, the kingdom of Israel, is destroyed by the Assyrian Empire, and the Israelites are taken into captivity. They're removed from out of their homeland. That's what 2 Kings 17 brings out. Judah, he goes on to say, they persevered, they became strong. Many of the Israelites, he said, joined them. I don't know if we'd say many. Some certainly did. The Bible brings that out. But the 10 tribes, I mean, this you would imagine would be a lot bigger than the southern two tribes. And the 10 tribes did in fact go into captivity a lot earlier than the kingdom of Judah did. About 100 years before. Judah persevered, as he said, but for not much longer, another century. And then they too were taken into captivity. A completely separate event. The Babylonians, as he brings out, Nebuchadnezzar. Okay, so look at 2 Kings 17. Let's just see what the Bible says. Verse 1, it says, "In the 12th year of Ahaz, king of Judah, began Hoshea, the son of Elah, to reign in Samaria." That's the northern kingdom of Israel. "He reigned in Samaria over Israel for 9 years." So Hoshea then is the last king of Israel before they're taken into captivity. Verse 3 says, "Against him came up Shalmaneser, king of Assyria, and Hoshea became his servant and gave him presents." So Shalmaneser, you heard Dory Gold there mention Tiglath-Pileser. Shalmaneser was the man who succeeded Tiglath-Pileser. Hoshea basically submitted to the Assyrians without a fight. He paid tribute to Shalmaneser. Verse 4 says, "And the king of Assyria found conspiracy in Hoshea, for he had sent messengers to So, king of Egypt, and brought no present to the king of Assyria as he had done year by year. Therefore, the king of Assyria shut him up and bound him in prison. Then the king of Assyria," it says, "came up throughout all the land and went up to Samaria and besieged it 3 years." So these events, they took place beginning in 721 BC, this 3-year siege that continued on through to 718 BC. 721 to 718. It says in verse 6, "In the 9th year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria took Samaria and carried Israel away." Notice that. "Carried Israel away into Assyria and placed them in Hala and Habor by the river of Gozan and the cities of the Medes," it says. So Israel goes into captivity. Samaria was overthrown, and the people of Israel, they weren't entirely destroyed. The kingdom certainly was. They were dislocated. They were transported to the Mesopotamian region. And that's what happened first before they then moved further north and west into Europe. That's all covered in Mr. Armstrong's book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. Notice further, verse 7 says, for so it was that the children of Israel had sinned." It gets into some of the sins of the Israelites. "They sinned against the Eternal, their God, which had brought them up out of the land of Egypt from under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and had feared other gods and walked in the statutes of the heathen, whom the Eternal cast out from before the children of Israel and of the kings of Israel, which they had made." So God had brought them out of Egypt. And yet it says the Israelites feared other gods more than the true God that brought them out of captivity. They followed after the gods of the people around them, the nations around them. Verse 13, here again, just hitting some high spots here. It says, "Yet the Lord testified against Israel and against Judah." Notice God distinctly refers to the two kingdoms throughout the passage. "He testified against them by all the prophets." Some prophets went to Israel. Some prophets went to Judah. Some went to both. It says, "And by all the seers, saying, turn you from your evil ways and keep my commandments and my statutes, according to all the law which I commanded your fathers and which I sent to you by my servants, the prophets." And so God warned them. God warned them for decades, for centuries even. He warned the southern tribes of Judah, the kingdom of Judah. He said to them, just like he did to Israel before them, "You turn from your evil ways, or else you're going to go into captivity." And that's what happened, as we just heard in that soundbite. They both went into captivity, separate captivities. It says in verse 18, therefore the Lord was very angry with Israel and removed them out of his sight. There was none left but the tribe of Judah only. So some in the centuries before did join or go to Judah, but most did not. And it was the most that were removed during that Assyrian captivity. Now, this removal or this dislocation, this marks the point when the northern 10 tribes became the lost 10 tribes of Israel. Because quite unlike the tribe of Judah or the kingdom of Judah, they never returned to Samaria. They never returned to that northern region that was Israel anciently. The Jews, of course, later did, following their Babylonian captivity. This is all in your Bible. This is all the true history of the nations or the kingdoms of Israel and Judah. It says in verse 20, and the Lord rejected all the seed of Israel and afflicted them and delivered them into the hand of spoilers until he cast them out of his sight. Verse 21 says, for he rent Israel from the house of David. This is the history going back to the days of Solomon, or the days following Solomon's death. And they made Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, king. And Jeroboam drove Israel from following the Lord and made them sin a great sin. For the children of Israel walked in all the sins of Jeroboam, which he did. They departed not from them until the Lord removed Israel out of his sight. Removed them. As he said by all his servants, the prophets, so Israel was carried away. You see that? Removed, carried away, transported or transplanted elsewhere. They were carried away out of their own land to Assyria unto this day. That was written, this prophecy, by the way, around about 620 BC. So carried away, removed until this day. And as I say, they never did return. Verse 24 says, and the king of Assyria brought men from Babylon and from Cutha and from Ava and from Hamath and all these regions and placed them in the cities of Samaria instead of the children of Israel. And they possessed Samaria and dwelt in the cities thereof. So the Assyrians removed the Israelites out of their homeland, and then they brought in these Babylonians. And, of course, these Babylonians that brought in all of their pagan customs and such, these were the Samaritans that the disciples of the first century encountered. These were the Samaritans that Peter encountered when he confronted Simon Magus in Acts 8. That's another subject, I guess. But if you look at what happens here with Israel, well, going back to what Moses had warned, this is from the book of Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy 28, verse 63, it says, and it shall come to pass that as the Lord rejoiced over you to do good and to multiply you, so the Lord will rejoice over you to destroy you and to bring you to naught, and you shall be plucked from off the land, whither you go to possess it. See, blessed for obedience, cursed for disobedience. And he says, if you disobey, if you turn away from God, the true God, and his laws and his teachings, then you're going to be plucked from off the land. And that's what happened to Israel. That's what happened to Judah 100 years later. It's just that God worked it out for a small remnant of Jews to return. But let's dwell on this identity of the Israelites first. Here again, Dory Gold made a clear distinction. It's based on the Bible. A clear distinction between these two kingdoms. Look now at 1 Chronicles. This is 1 Chronicles chapter 5, a key verse that Mr. Armstrong draws attention to in the U.S. and Britain in prophecy. 1 Chronicles chapter 5 and verse 1. It says, now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, but for as much as he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given unto the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel. And the genealogy is not to be reckoned after the birthright. The Revised Standard says, so that he, that's speaking of Reuben, is not enrolled in the genealogy according to the birthright. Carrying on in verse 2 from the King James Version, it says, for Judah prevailed above his brethren, and of him came the chief ruler, but the birthright was Joseph's. So Judah prevailed. Judah had the scepter promise, but the birthright promises, those fabulous national blessings of wealth and prosperity and power, that belonged to Joseph. It says in the U.S. and Britain in prophecy, the assurance of multitudinous population, material and national prosperity, dominance over other nations, was now given to Joseph and his sons. Mr. Armstrong says, mark that well. The birthright was not to be inherited by all the tribes of Israel. It was not given to the Jews, only a part of the Israelites, the descendants of Joseph. The descendants of Joseph. They were to inherit these tremendous national promises. Now, you go back to what Dory Gold was describing in one of those clips, that you had the two tribes in the south, and the modern-day Jews came from them. And then you had the 10 tribes in the north, and guess what? Joseph was in the north. The tribe of Joseph, or the two tribes, Ephraim and Manasseh, Joseph's two sons, they were in the north. They were, if you believe what 1 Chronicles 5 says, they were to receive the birthright promises. And so what happened then? Well, we know what happened following Hosea, as we just read. The Assyrians came in there and they conquered the Israelite kingdom. And they removed and they carried away the Israelites into Assyria. Fascinating history, is it not? It's all in your Bible. And how many people understand it? People want to say, critics of Mr. Armstrong want to say, oh, the U.S. and Britain in prophecy. Well, that's based on some legend here or some crazy idea over here or some other author that wrote in the 1800s. It's based on the Bible. And anyone that's willing to just dig into the Bible a little bit can prove this for himself. It's an astounding truth. It's the key to unlocking all of Bible prophecy. It's the key to being able to understand the Bible. It's an awesome truth. If you go back to the promises God made to the great patriarch Abraham, starting in Genesis 12, carrying on, you can read more about it in Genesis 17. God promised Abraham that he would be the father of many nations. Many, plural, not just one. Many nations. Now, the Jews have never been more than one nation. They've never been more than one nation. And furthermore, as we just read, God promised the physical abundance and prosperity and power to Joseph and not the Jews. He promised that to Joseph and not Judah. So what does this mean? Well, Judah certainly did receive the scepter promise, the promise of that royal line that began with King David, that eventually culminates in the reign or rule of Jesus Christ over all the earth. Jesus was Jewish. Jesus was of the line of Judah. But he was not of the tribe of Joseph. And Joseph was the tribe to receive the superabundant prosperity and power of the birthright promises. Now, I don't have time to get into the 2,620-year delay and a year for a day in prophecy. All that's discussed in the United States and Britain in prophecy. I'll leave it to you to dig in. And that, too, is based on Leviticus. It's based on prophecy. It's based on the sure word of the Holy Bible. But you look at these two kingdoms, and Dory Gold alludes to it. He alluded to it on a nationally syndicated radio program all across the United States on Monday night. The history of these two kingdoms, Israel and Judah, it's quite different. I mean, they both ended in disaster. And the captivities came at different times. But that's just one of many differences. The Israelites were carried away, never to return. The Jews were carried away, but they did return, or a small remnant did, when Cyrus allowed them to go back to their homeland to rebuild the city walls of Jerusalem and the temple as well. The lost tribes, though, the lost 10 tribes, they became lost from worldview. They became known even as the lost 10 tribes. So where did they go, and why aren't more people curious? Why don't more people want to know the truth? Were they entirely destroyed? No. Did they just disappear? No, of course not. The Jews didn't disappear, and I mean, they've been persecuted and wiped out in many ways. And yet they've still persevered and survived. I mean, look at just as recently as World War II, Adolf Hitler took out half of them. He wiped out half the Jewish race. The Israelites did not disappear. They weren't completely destroyed from off the face of the earth. They were removed. They were carried away. I've read this quote before. It's from a 1969 New York Times article. It's one about Herbert Armstrong and about his book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. And the New York Times said in 1969, another important teaching of the movement is that the English and American peoples are the descendants of the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh. So we cut to the chase. I tell you the end and leave a lot out, because this is just one radio program. But you've got to go and study it for yourself if you haven't already. But I'll just add this with respect to the United States and Britain in prophecy. That book went to, what was it, 6-7 million people around the world? The New York Times in that 69 article said that there were more than 2 million adherents to that teaching in America. I'm not sure where they got that figure from. But this is not just some obscure belief. A lot have fallen away from this truth, for sure. But there's also a lot of people in the last century or so that have been made aware of this truth. And it is the truth. It's based on all these scriptures and more that we've just touched on here on today's program. Make sure, if you haven't requested your own copy already, that you contact us through the website, thetrumpet.com, to secure your own copy of The United States and Britain in Prophecy. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. At one time, the kings of ancient Israel and Judah, during the period of the divided monarchy, were not known apart from the biblical record. Critics did not believe they existed. But the relatively new science of archaeology, the digging up and study of the material remains of man's past, has confirmed without question the historical accuracy of the Bible. Solid, documented evidence, apart from the Bible, confirms events and personalities that were at one time known to us only from Scripture. The Hezekiah Bulla is the latest find among literally hundreds of archaeological discoveries that corroborates Bible history. To learn more about this God-inspired text, request The Proof of the Bible and the Herbert W. Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. There is no cost or obligation, and your information remains secure. All of our literature is offered free of charge, without cost or obligation to you. In addition to the free booklet, we would like for you to enroll in the Herbert W. Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. This 3-year college course includes 36 lessons and examines not just the fundamental questions of religion, but the fundamental questions of life. Request The Proof of the Bible and the Herbert W. Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course. There is no cost or obligation, and your information remains secure.
Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Yes, indeed. Ooh. We're broadcasting live today in the midst of a scorching heat wave here in the UK. Hopefully you saw my tweet ahead of the program where I said we had a sizzling program lined up for today. You get it? Well, I talked about the story I'd been sitting on for several days because it's been such a busy week following graduation on Sunday and then the special guest that we had here at Edstone Wednesday night and all day yesterday. And I've also failed to mention that I attended another opera on Monday night, Verdi's Don Carlo, a really long opera. Probably not the best idea to see a long opera the day after a crazy busy graduation weekend. I did have a little bit of a trouble at certain points keeping awake, but I did love it. My wife enjoyed it. And if I have some time, maybe next week, I can find a good selection from the opera to play on the program since we haven't done that in quite some time. Well, as I mentioned at the top of the show, we had quite a few people respond to yesterday's program, some really good feedback. One here from Oklahoma says, thanks so much for the fascinating interview with Mr. Frank. Such a pity more don't heed his warnings. Also, a very interesting view on Mr. Gutenberg. We'll have to wait and see how that pans out. Another one here, also from Oklahoma, says, I love the TDR interview this morning. I thought you asked some really good questions, and the conversation seemed to go so smooth. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Another one here says, wow, what a program today. And he didn't think Mr. Gutenberg would be the strong man of Europe. Maybe time will change his mind. Thank you for the interview. It was fascinating. Mr. Armstrong would really find it prophetic. Another one here comes from down in Australia. It says, first of all, I wanted to mention how I love receiving the trumpet brief every day. Sure does keep us on our toes, even more so. It's very personal and descriptive. Secondly, I wanted to mention how gripping the interview with Mr. Frank was. I'll have to listen to it a second and probably a third time. I found it very interesting, to say the least, especially the part when he said the Germans are not an empathetic people, and what he said about Carl Theodor zu Gutenberg. Time will tell, as it says there. And if you haven't, by the way, listened to that program from yesterday, I gave you some of the stats there at the top of the show. But of course, you can go and listen to the podcast of the program at thetrumpet.com or at kpcg.fm. And if you haven't yet gotten the podcast to be delivered to your handheld device, you should go and do that at the, iTunes or wherever. I think there's other ways that you can do it as well, but I get the shows delivered straight to my phone each day through iTunes, a wonderful service for sure. Very convenient. Carrying on from this feedback from Australia, she says, I also loved hearing Melanie Phillips. What a breath of fresh air she is. I kind of get the feeling that God is going to open up great doors with people in the world that think on similar things as God's church, it says, and maybe we'll get to interview a few more very interesting people, people we've never dreamed of interviewing. Anyway, what a time to be living right now. Every day is so exciting. Prophecies are being fulfilled and fast. Another email response to yesterday's show says here, despite the measured and quiet tones of this interview, it was absolutely electrifying for those of us who could hear it. I thought that was an excellent comment, because it was, and just listening to the volume, I mean, it was a lot lower key than some of the programs I give just on my own, But what an electrifying message to just hear that discussion and to hear from one of Germany's own, who was not even familiar with Herbert Armstrong or any of our works or literature, just coming over here and telling us the truth, like with Melanie Phillips. I mean, how refreshing is it to just get the straight scoop, to just get the straight and honest truth in a world that is so consumed with lies and deceit, and where the truth, as I said last week, is just falling to the ground at every turn. It is refreshing because it's just so unusual in this world today. Another one here from Oklahoma. Wow, it says, that interview was chilling and exciting, all wrapped up into one. I found myself sitting in my truck just trying to hear more. To hear a man who lived through this nightmarish time speak the same words that Mr. Armstrong prophesied for years and now gets trumpeted to the world through this current voice crying in the wilderness. Absolutely remarkable stuff. I can't wait to hear more of what was recorded in the subsequent interviews. What a remarkable man, and what a warning that only a few will listen to and heed. Keep up the good work to you and to all of your staff. This one here comes from Colorado. It says, what a mind-blowing and sobering warning to this dying world. Awesome that you and Mr. McDonald were able to interview Mr. Frank at this time, right on the heels of President Trump's trip to address Prime Minister Netanyahu and the Palestinian Authority's chairman, Mahmoud Abbas. It says here, also the magazine Life, it's a little further on in the email, she brings up the magazine Life, and it has an expose on Anne Frank. The diary at 70, it says her life and her legacy. I read her diary as a child decades ago. My grandfather grew up just south of Amsterdam. He came to the U.S. in his early 20s, fought in World War I and World War II for the U.S., returned just before the last one, and saw and warned the family that it would happen again. That's what so many said coming out of World War II, coming from that same era as Nicholas Frank, and some brought it up last night during the dinner with Mr. Frank, saying that, well, I've got a father or a grandfather that said this following World War II, it's going to happen again. And there was Mr. Frank just nodding his head. But see, so many of those people are dying off. So many of those unusual voices are no longer around. Well, that's why we've got to remember this truth and do our very best to resurrect it, to promote it, to dispense with it, to proclaim it. So it really is a voice crying in the wilderness. Another one here comes from Florida. I caught all but the last 7 minutes or so of today's interview with Mr. Frank. Really appreciated you having him on the show. I hadn't known of him or his determined desire to both warn of the two Germanys as well as atone for his father's sins before you played the segment of the BBC interview a few weeks ago. It was interesting to hear of the Catholic Church's campaign to stamp out his condemning book within Poland. Glad to see that they were unsuccessful. That book, by the way, that was the 1987 book that he wrote, kind of his response to his father's atrocities. And it wasn't, as one emailer suggested, it wasn't stamped out entirely. They just, as this one brings out here, they attempted to do it in Poland. But that's the book. It's still out there. It's still available. You can, I think, even get it on Amazon. What was the name of it again? In the Shadow of the Reich, I think, was the name of it. It says, I'm sure the work within their congregations to discredit his message or discredit him as is the next best option. It says, he gives me a link to a Polish documentary. In any event, he says, finally, also appreciated the use of YouTube as a live stream of the broadcast. I wouldn't have caught it live otherwise. So there's all the more reason why, if Richard Palmer's listening upstairs, to get those live streams going to YouTube, Facebook, Twitter even. Even Twitter has a live feed. That's, as Mr. Frank would say, Unbelievable. Another one here from Regina, Saskatchewan. It says, fascinating interview today. What an interesting man. I had to take notes so I wouldn't forget anything. Not that your expert team at Edstone would miss anything. What a wealth and insight, it says. When you went to the break, I quickly checked to check the library to see if he had any books. She mentions the one here, and then she also sees the documentary, Hitler's Children. She refers that to us, and we actually did have some on our staff go through that documentary. I think that's from maybe the early 1990s. In any event, if you wanted to search for a possible video to view following yesterday's show, you can maybe run a Google search on Hitler's Children, a documentary film, I think, from the early 1990s. Finally, though, she says here, when Mr. Frank started talking about a strong leader who is good-looking, well-spoken, charismatic, I sense that you and Mr. McDonald probably looked at each other. And then finally, thank you so much for this. It's definitely giving the certain sound of the trumpet this world needs at this time. Well, a few more emails that have come in response to the trumpet brief from over the past week. This one here says, I was listening to your podcast of May 19, where you said that you had a few who unsubscribed and then others who gave something like 80 positive responses. I just want to say that readers and listeners such as I know and appreciate your views and subjects and follow them so closely that I, for one, do not respond or have to read all of your books. Just to let you know, we are here and fully appreciate your truths as being one of the only true voices in this world. He goes on to talk about Melanie Phillips and some of the other things that we've covered of late. Another email here in response to the brief we sent out last Friday about Iran's free election farce. Thank you, Mr. Fleury, for keeping us updated on issues of the world. I didn't know that the supreme leader is the one in charge of everything in Iran. With much thanks. Another one here, responding to Churchill's most important resource. I think Brad McDonald wrote that one on Monday. It says here, too bad we don't have politicians of Churchill's caliber today, but it appears it is not in God's plan. If my memory serves me correctly, I think the British people thanked Churchill for his service during World War II by voting him out of office. Yes, indeed. That your memory is serving you right. And it happened right after World War II. Astounding, isn't it? He saved the West. He saved Britain. And then he's voted right out of office. Amazing. Why we can't keep calm and carry on. This is responding to the brief from, I think, Wednesday or maybe Tuesday. This was shocking, although speaking of that attack in Manchester, which right now feels like it was several weeks ago, but that was just Monday night. This was shocking, although not surprising. When I heard of this happening yesterday, every attack is quite sobering, and it should be sobering to everyone. This honestly doesn't make any sense to not do anything about this problem. Our people, just 100 years ago, wouldn't react this way. And then another one here about the brief that went out yesterday or the day before about Mr. Frank coming into Edstone. I love these trumpet briefs. It's like receiving the day's minutes from God's work. And may he strongly bless Mr. Frank's visit. That's someone writing, obviously, before the visit. And it went extremely well. One final one here says here, thank you for the update on Nicholas Frank. I'll be ready to listen. So that's just a few of the emails that have come in response to the program and in response to the trumpet brief. We'll wrap things up with a few additional items when we come back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are We Living in the Last Days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Lots going on in the world this past week with President Trump's trip through Europe now and the speech that he gave yesterday in front of NATO members and leaders. If I have time, I can comment a little bit on that. But I just want to get to this story here because it is something that really hasn't gotten much attention, or at least not nearly as much as it should have. And it's from two or three days ago. This revelation that the Obama Intel Agency secretly conducted illegal searches on Americans for years. Journalists and members of the mainstream media might want to sit up and take note, or at least break away momentarily from their nonstop coverage about everything Trump, everything that President Trump is presumably doing wrong. And listen to this, just listen to this, for what it's saying. The National Security Agency under former President Barack Obama routinely violated American privacy protections while scouring through overseas intercepts and failed to disclose the extent of the problem until the final days before Donald Trump was elected president last fall. It was just routinely violating American privacy protections, and it continued right up through to the end of the administration. This is according to one top secret document that chronicles some of the most serious, this is quoting from the article, some of the most serious constitutional abuses to date by the U.S. intelligence community. And yet here you still have everyone in the media just consumed with the supposed connection between the Trump administration and the Russians. And look at this. Look at this. More than 5% or one out of every 20 searches seeking upstream internet data on Americans inside the NSA's so-called Section 702 database violated the safeguards Obama and his intelligence chiefs vowed to follow in 2011. They vowed to follow this. And then what was happening all along the way? Well, if you were reading at thetrumpet.com, you knew. I mean, this massive data storehouse they were building in Utah. And we were telling you where this was leading. It was leading to an abuse of power. And that's now what these investigations are showing. The Obama administration, it says, self-disclosed the problem at a closed-door hearing October 26th. Before the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court that set off alarm. Trump was elected 2 weeks later. It says the normally supportive court, listen to this, the normally supportive court censured administration officials, saying the failure to disclose the extent of the violations earlier amounted to an institutional lack of candor, and that the improper searches constituted a very serious Fourth Amendment issue, according to a recently unsealed court document. It's just from late April 2017. It says the admitted violations undercut one of the primary defenses that the intelligence community and Obama officials have used in recent weeks to justify their snooping into incidental NSA intercepts about Americans. See, that came up several weeks ago. But even that, the media pushed aside because they've got to attack Donald Trump. But here, all these revelations were coming out just a month, 6 weeks ago. Susan Rice and others intercepting all of this information and then unmasking. It says here, officials like the former National Security Advisor Susan Rice have argued their activities were legal under the so-called minimization rule changes Obama made, and that the intelligence agencies were strictly monitored to avoid abuses. That's what they claimed when they caught some flack for this. But it says here the intelligence court and the NSA's own internal watchdog found that not to be true. what they were saying, in other words, the Obama officials, justifying their snooping by saying, hey, look, everything's monitored. There's higher-ups that are overseeing this process to make sure that there's no abuses. Well, in fact, there were no, I mean, there was no oversight. It says here, the intelligence court, well, I read that. It says later, the American Civil Liberties Union, this is not exactly a bastion of conservatism. The American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, said the newly disclosed violations are some of the most serious to ever be documented and strongly call into question the U.S. intelligence community's ability to police itself and safeguard Americans' privacy as guaranteed by the Constitution's Fourth Amendment protections against unlawful search and seizure. And then it quotes a rep from the ACLU saying, I think what this emphasizes is the shocking lack of oversight of these programs. It's shocking. But of course, the Obama administration, they'll be given a pass. And if there is any further investigation into this, it'll focus on, well, the intelligence community, quote unquote. And yet, look at who was behind it for something like 6-7 years. Well, that's all that we have time to get into. Perhaps we'll have some more time next week to cover some of the stack here that we weren't able to get to. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you for joining us today, and thank you for joining us all week, and thanks for the feedback this week as well. We'll see you next week.